Wednesday, May 4th, 2016, you are listening to the Daily Dose Sports Podcast, and I am your host, Clint Daly, sports writer from Denver, Colorado. You know, we release a new podcast every single Wednesday and bring you, you know, kind of a sarcastic but an insightful look at the world of sports. You can download the podcast pretty much anywhere that podcasts are available. And if you subscribe to it, you'll be sure to never miss a single episode. If you'd like to contact the show, feel free to hit us with an email. You got a pressing question? You need some advice about something? You got a suggestion for something we are doing here at the show? We would love to hear from you. Feel free to shoot us an email at dailydosesports@gmail.com. You can also hit us on Twitter or on Facebook. Both of those handles are at Daily Dose Sports. That is D-A-L-Y, Daily Dose Sports. And we have an email today, actually, that I want to get to. Got something this past week that I wanted to read. And we have a very special announcement to get to. Today on the show, of course, we're going to get to that email, and we're going to talk some NBA playoffs. Things are starting to get crazy in the NBA playoffs. Last night, a very interesting night in the NBA playoffs. We also have to recap the NFL draft. We're going to have winners and losers from the NFL draft, and you know, they might not be exactly who you think. And as we always do, we have to get to our Daily Dose Top 5. Always a popular segment on the show. You never know which way the Daily Dose Top 5 is going to go. It seems like it just kind of has a mind of its own. But make sure that you stick around for the Daily Dose Top 5. Like I said, we do have some breaking news. Yes, yes. We've got to get to. Last week, you might not know this. You may not be aware of this. Last week, I actually appeared on a podcast called Prime, the Prime podcast, which is part of a network of podcasts called the Rogue Intel Network. And we talked, you know, and that podcast is a different deal. Like, they talk about a number of different subjects. It's not a sports podcast. You know, they're having fun, and they're doing, you know, some comedy stuff over there. Talked about a number of different subjects. But while I was on the Prime podcast with Duff, Carrie, and TJ, well, I was actually asked this question.
Well, we've got something that we wanted to announce on the show tonight. We like your show. We've actually been talking about it amongst the team of fine broadcasters on our network. All of them, not just Prime, but Prime. Now that I'm older, the powerful Nerdcast, of course. Who could forget about Round Trip and Unquote? All the fine shows on the network. We've all sat down and talked about it, and we'd like to invite you on the network.
Well, I thank you for that. I think that it feels like a good fit. It feels like a nice spot for the Daily Dose, and I've enjoyed being on even today and just kind of talking to you guys and getting to know everyone involved with this. I think it feels good. We're happy to be aboard.
Great. Well, welcome aboard. We'll be working in the next week or two to get you guys fully onboarded. We'll get all of your older episodes up on the network. We'll work on getting you access to the newer episodes so you can all listen to the Daily Dose Sports Podcast here on the network.
Yes, so there you have it. The Daily Dose Sports Podcast is now part of the Rogue Intel Podcast Network. Everyone over there was awesome, and I think it should be a good fit for us. So very, very soon, you will be able to go over to rogueintel.com and listen to the show, listen to all of the Daily Dose Sports Podcasts, plus have access to, you know, some of their other shows that are over there, whether it's Prime, like he said, Now That I'm Older, the powerful Nerd Podcast, Nerdcast, whatever. There's a number of different shows over there that you'll want to check out, and a number of different shows over there that I think will be of interest to you. The great thing about us joining the Rogue Intel Network is that it gives us some flexibility. It gives us the opportunity to do some really cool new things with the podcast. And so we're very excited about that. If you're not familiar with, you know, the whole kind of podcast network thing, and I don't want to get too deep on you here, but what it gives us a chance to do is it lets us, you know, kind of do some some cross networking for each other. We try to help each other out, try to do as much as we can to get each other, some more listens and some more consistent listeners. And so if it gives us a chance here at the Daily Dose to get a few more listeners, you know, we're all for it. The bigger we get, the better that we get, and the more kind of fun things that we get an opportunity to do. So it's something exciting for us to be a part of Rogue Intel, and we are looking forward to it. So, expect to hear more about this in the next few weeks. We've got, you know, how is this going to affect you directly? You can still go wherever it is that you go right now. You can still go there and download the podcast. As we start to, you know, change and transition over, I will make sure to keep everyone informed. And you should be able to still go to those same spots, but there'll be a little bit more. There'll be a little bit more for you. A few more things for you that are going to be available to you. So some exciting stuff happening here. But we are happy to be a part of the Rogue Intel Podcast Network. Looking forward to that. Hey, we actually do have some sports stuff that we got to get to this week. You know, you might not realize this, and you know, we haven't jumped in quite yet. But do you realize that we had a major sports upset this week? I mean, one of the biggest sports upsets ever in the history of sports. No, I'm not talking about the Thunder beating the Spurs on Monday night. I told you last week, do not sleep on the Thunder. That series is not over. No, I'm not talking about the Colorado Rockies just being one game back in the National League West either. It's May. We know the Rockies always look good in May. It's, you know, all those other 11 months out of the year besides May that somehow seem to trip up that rotten franchise. What I'm talking about today is the British Premier League. Yes, the British. Yes, we are literally talking British Premier League right now. Seriously, we're talking soccer on the Daily Dose today. That's the kind of expansion. Big Rob, I know you're loving this. We're actually talking some soccer today. Do you realize on Monday, Leicester City pulled off one of the greatest upsets in sports history? I know. Just hang on. I know it's soccer, and the only time we here in, you know, the United States actually care about soccer is like for 5 minutes in a shootout of a World Cup game like every 4 years. But just wait, hear me out. Do you remember back a few months ago? This is maybe even a year ago, maybe not quite a year ago. I was asking for some suggestions because, you know, we get to this kind of dry season where football hasn't quite started and baseball is making me take a nap and hockey and the NBA are kind of over and it's kind of getting that dry seat right before football kind of gets started. And the British Premier League kind of kicks off and they kind of get going and it kind of gets rolling and it's getting bigger and bigger and bigger. And I can watch some soccer. Like, I'm not violently opposed to watching soccer. That I can at least turn it on and at least... So I had asked here on the podcast, I had said, I don't have a team. Like, I don't have an allegiance to an English Premier team. I don't have any idea. Like, I don't know the area. I don't know the players. I don't know enough about it. And so I had asked here on the podcast. I mean, like I said, I'm from Colorado. I don't have an allegiance, to England and all that kind of stuff. Well, I actually heard back from a number of you. I actually heard back from a number of listeners, and I heard from a few people said, hey, you should cheer for Manchester City. Manchester City might be the good spot for you. They're always right in the thick of it. Might be a good spot. I heard from Everton fans, a couple fans, that support Everton, said, "Hey, you ought to be an Everton supporter." That kind of thing. I heard from Chelsea fans. In fact, now my daughter somehow has decided she's going to cheer for Chelsea. I don't have any idea why. And of course, I heard from the Tottenham Hotspur fans. But you know who I didn't hear from? I didn't hear anything from the Leicester City fans. And you know why? Because Leicester City hasn't been very good. I mean, when you think back, just going back, a few years ago, 2008, they had been relegated. Now, relegation, if you're not familiar, and you might not be, relegation in soccer is something that we absolutely should have in American sports. Like, in the NBA, in Major League Baseball, I wouldn't mind seeing it in the NFL, and maybe even in college sports. Here's the problem with relegation. So what relegation is if you aren't up to par, if you aren't good enough, then they dump you down to a lower league. So they dump you down to the minor leagues and say, yeah, come back to us when you get a little bit better. When you play your way up, then you can come play with the big boys. Until then, go do something else with your time. Think about if we had relegation here in the United States. Let's see. The Nuggets would be relegated. The Rockies would be relegated. If we had it in college football, every single Air Force might stay in. Air Force Academy would probably still be Division I, but like Colorado State, you're both heading down to D2. The Cleveland Browns would get relegated. The Philadelphia 76ers would get relegated. I mean, it's not all bad, right? I mean, that wouldn't be the worst thing in the world to have a team and just be like, you know what? Yeah, you can't hang. We got to get rid of you. You have to go do something else. Like I said, not the worst thing in the world. Leicester City had been relegated in 2008, and they had played down in the lower league and had just gotten back in 2014, just 2 years ago. Now, in that first season back, they finished 14th. They finished 14th. Lower half of the pack. Lower half of the pack. Not quite relegation mode, but lower half of the pack for sure. And then this season, going into the season, if you wanted to go, you know, lay a bet, if you wanted to go put some money down, now you can actually bet over there. Like, you can bet at the sporting event over there, which, by the way, it's just a matter of time before here in the States we can do that, because it does bring in a ton of money. But this season, when the season started, Leicester City was a 5,000-1 underdog to win the Premier League title. 5,000-1. To put that just a little bit of perspective, just some perspective, Buster Douglas was 42-1 when he beat Mike Tyson. 5,000-1? Now, don't get me wrong. And from what I understand, and believe me, it's not because I watched it, because I didn't. But from what I understand, it was a down year in the Premier League. They had some guys injured. Some of the top teams that are usually kind of the big dogs were kind of down this year and that kind of thing. But 5,000-1? I mean, when the Red Sox were down 0-3 to the Yankees in 2004, Vegas was giving the odds of 120-1 to come back and win it. Like, they had no chance. They had no chance. Red Sox are down 0-3. Yankees are going to roll. Yankees are going to win this. They're down 0-3. 120-1 says they'll come back. 5,000-1? That's pretty amazing. I mean, I think there are probably better odds that, like, I don't know, a Kardashian like gets in the White House than Leicester City. And they did it. On Monday, they clinched the title. Now, here's one problem I have with the Premier League. And I'll be honest, I still haven't quite picked a team. If you have a suggestion, and don't tell me Leicester City. I can't jump on it now. I can't jump on that bandwagon now. If somebody would have told me Leicester City back then, I would have jumped on, and then I'd be sitting pretty right now. But no one had said that. So if you have a suggestion, I'm open to it. But here's one of the problems I have with the Premier League. Probably the biggest problem I have. There's no playoffs. Playoffs? There's no playoffs. When the season ends, they just tally up the point. Yep, you're the winner. That's the end. It's all over. Can't you play a Final Four or something? I mean, what are you, college football? There's no playoff whatsoever, and college football has actually passed you now. You have to have some kind of, at some point, because at the end of the day, this is all about money. At some point, doesn't the Premier League start to look around and go, wait a second, you mean to tell me we could have playoffs and just have a ton more money than we have right now? Yes, quite easily you could have that. It wouldn't be that hard either. So, I mean, it's just a matter of time before we have playoffs in the Premier. That would make it more interesting to me. You get to the end of the season and you just play out your regular season. Okay, that's all. The end of the season, we call end. That's not quite as interesting to me. I would prefer that we actually got to the playoffs, and I'm sure it will happen eventually once they realize they're leaving a ton of money on the table. Okay, we're done talking about soccer. We're done talking about soccer for the week, probably the year. When's the next World Cup? Big Rob, when's the next World Cup? Like in 2 years or something? 3 years? I don't know. Whenever that is, we'll talk about some soccer again at that point. And also, did I talk any baseball? Man, I'm done talking about baseball too. The NBA playoffs, they're finally starting to get a little bit interesting. After an awful first round, and I told you the first round was terrible. I mean, yes, you had a couple games go to game seven or what, but it was bad basketball. It was bad basketball. They're finally starting to get a little interesting. But first, we've got to talk about an NBA coaching hire. Because the Los Angeles Lakers have hired their new head coach as they introduced Golden State Warriors assistant Luke Walton as the new guy in LA. Now, I completely understand that the city of Los Angeles loves shiny things. They got shiny cars. They've got shiny people. I understand. I get it. Whatever. But I am not completely sure about this hire. I am not quite certain that this is the best situation for Luke Walton or for the Lakers. Because this Lakers roster is a complete mess. You've got a bunch of young guys. You don't have that much talent. You don't have guys that work very hard. You've got some bad attitudes. You know, I heard Byron Scott, who was just fired as the Lakers coach, I heard him talking last week, and he was just kind of discussing kind of what went wrong. What was it that went wrong? Where did you have the problems? Well, we didn't win enough. We didn't get the job done. It was up to me to kind of, you know, turn this thing around, and I didn't get it going. And they asked him about the situation with rookie point guard D'Angelo Russell. And he said, Russell said that D'Angelo Russell has a little bit of an entitled attitude about him. He doesn't work very hard. First off, I don't have any idea what Russell thinks he's entitled to because he hasn't done anything. But what is Luke Walton going to say to him? Like, what insight is Luke Walton going to bring? Look, D'Angelo, you might be sitting on third base, young man, but you didn't hit that triple. Like, Luke, you didn't hit that triple. You're only where you are because of dear old dad. I mean, this team has some serious, serious problems. And here's my issue. These problems that he's going to face, like, because like the next serious problem Luke Walton faces in his life is going to be the first problem he's ever faced in his life. I mean, I'm not saying the guy can't coach. I'm not saying he's going to be a bad coach. I'm just saying you haven't dealt with any of the things you're going to deal with here. And I'm not sure you're capable of dealing with this stuff. This situation might go right over your head. I mean, Luke Walton is coming from Golden State, where they were rolling and everything was going, and you had guys that are coaches on the floor. You have the Draymond Greens. You have the Steph Currys. You have the guys that get it. They come out and they play hard every night. That is not the same situation here. And you had a pretty good base already in place there at Golden State, where you kind of just had to go in and roll along. That's not the case. This is a mess. And the front office is a good portion of the mess. The front office is a lot of the mess. And now you're asking Luke Walton to clean this mess up? I don't know if that's fair to him. But he took the job, so I guess that's on him. Some questions for Luke Walton that they're asking. Is he going to run the triangle? Is he going to run it? The whole triangle thing is the funniest thing. I love hearing sports media talk about the triangle offense, because they act like the triangle offense is this mystical, crazy idea. It's just out there, and they sit there and they say, well, is he going to run the triangle? I don't know if he has the people to run the triangle. Well, you know, the triangle worked with Michael Jordan and Scottie Pippen. It worked with Kobe and Shaq, but I don't know if you can run whatever offense you want. It doesn't make it. The triangle isn't anything amazing. The triangle isn't any. All the triangle is formations on the floor and where you're going to pass out of. Yes, there are reads. There are reactions that you're going to have according to the reads, but let's stop making this mystical. Is Luke Walton going to run the triangle? I don't know. I don't know if he has the guys that have enough capabilities to run those kind of read options. So he might not have a smart enough team to run the triangle. He says he's going to run more of the Golden State kind of stuff. Are you bringing Steph Curry with you? Because I've got news for you. If you've got D'Angelo Russell bouncing it off his foot and Swaggy P shooting, it's going to look a little bit different than Golden State, isn't it? Not going to quite look the same way as it looks right now out in the Bay Area. Going to be a little bit different. It's going to be interesting to see what Luke Walton does. I don't know. Here is my advice. Los Angeles, be careful. I know you like shiny things, but like most toddlers, you end up putting shiny things right in your mouth, and then you end up choking on them. Be careful with this hire. Be careful with this hire. Speaking of this whole situation, this kind of brings us to an email that I want to read to you. We get emails every once in a while, and if you send us something, you know, pretty good, I like to try to get it on the show. We have some intelligent. I've always told you. The best part about doing the Daily Dose is I've come into contact and I hear from some of the listeners, and this show has very, very smart listeners. That is probably my favorite aspect of doing the show. I have smart listeners. I don't have the dumb rah-rah moron out there that is, you know, crushing the beer can on his head. I have intelligent listeners that actually look at sports with, just a hint of common sense. And I love that about this show. Let's read our first email. This is from Mike in Fontana. We have heard from Mike a number of times. Mike always has good questions, and Mike always brings, a little bit of insight to the show. He says, Clint, love the Daily Dose. With all of the money being paid to NBA players, is it too much to ask that they actually make a free throw. Andre Drummond shoots 35%. DeAndre Jordan is about 43%. And Dwight Howard is shooting at 49%. Do their coaches even try to make them improve? Mike, thank you, as usual. Always sending us something good. Here's the thing. Here's the thing about these guys, and we see, especially the big men, but we see, you know, a few different guys that struggle at the free throw line. And it's a little bit tough for NBA coaches to deal with this. And I say this from a coaching perspective. How do you deal with your star player that can't make a free throw? How do you deal with, I mean, look at these three guys. Andre Drummond is probably the best player in a Detroit uniform. DeAndre Jordan is definitely one of the better Clippers on the team. And Dwight Howard, I mean, yes, probably heavily overrated, but he's always going to be one of the big dogs on whatever team it is that he's playing for. So you have a little bit of what we just talked about with D'Angelo Russell. You have a little bit of entitlement going with his guys. Hey, I'm good enough. I don't need to go out there and work on my free throws. And then from the coaching side of it, you have these coaches in all these situations. And Doc Rivers at the Clippers is probably a guy, I guess, that he has some pull. Van Gundy up at Detroit, a little bit of pull. But let's be honest, all these guys are, it's just a matter of time before, you know, everybody's getting fired. Down at Houston, who knows who the coach is down there? I mean, that could change at the drop of a hat. So when you're looking at it from a coaching perspective, are these guys making their players go out and work on free throws? Maybe a little bit. I mean, don't get me wrong. They're bringing in like shooting specialists. They're bringing in like hypnotists. They're bringing in like meditation gurus. You name it. They're trying to get these guys better at shooting free throws. But I also can't go and anger my franchise player and say, hey, you need to get in the gym and work on some free throws, because most of these guys just go to the owner and say, man, get rid of this dumb coach. Coaches in the NBA, remember, just during the season this past year, they fired around 30% of the coaches in the NBA just during the season. That's not postseason. That's not once the season is over. We lost 30% of our coaches during the year. So some of these coaches, let's be real honest, are scared to death to say much to their players at all. They're not going to try to make them mad. They're not going to try to say anything. I'm not going to sit there and tell you, hey, you know you really ought to work on your free throw. Forget you. I do what I want. Now, here's a couple thoughts on the whole free throw thing. Because there is a physical component to it. When you're a big guy, when you're one of these, and most of these guys are big men, when you're a big guy, look at someone like Shaquille O'Neal, who for his career shot about 53% at the line. Now, here's what I want you to do. You can do this at home, or in your car, as you're driving, whatever you want to do. Go pick up a marble and try to shoot it with some touch and some backspin. That's kind of what they're doing with a basketball. Some of these guys pick up a basketball like it's a little marble. They have these huge hands, and most of the guys with big hands struggle getting any sort of touch. If you don't have backspin and you don't have a good touch on the ball, then you don't get those friendly rolls. It's not easy to shoot that little ball with touch when you have those giant hands. But to be honest, most of these guys, it comes down to they just don't care that much about improving, honestly. Shaq didn't. You can sit there and say, well, Shaq, when it was on the line, according to the stats, he hit 53% of his shots. So don't tell me how good of a shooter he was when it was on the line, because it really wasn't. You know, Rick Barry told Shaquille O'Neal he could get him shooting 60 to 70% if he shot underhanded, two hands. But see, that's not cool. That's not cool. So he wasn't going to do that. And so for every two shots he shot, he clanked one of them. These guys today are the same way. It's not cool to change your free throw. It's not cool to really go out and work on it. It's not cool maybe to sit there and say, hey, I'm going to shoot one-handed and make sure that I get some touch and keep my offhand completely uninvolved in it. I'm going to do that because I want to get better. No, they don't want to do it. And most NBA coaches don't have the stones to make them do it because they know they're on thin ice as it is. But it is interesting. It is interesting. I want you to think about guys like head coaches like Greg Popovich. You know, Greg Popovich, he would have no problem making his guys work on his free throws. If he had an issue with the way you were shooting your free throws, if he had DeAndre Jordan in San Antonio, I promise you, Jordan would be a better free throw shooter or he wouldn't play. Because look at Greg Popovich. Remember back early in his career, Tim Duncan was a bad free throw shooter. Now, don't get me wrong, Tim Duncan is that guy that's going to try to get better. But you think Greg Popovich didn't have something to do with that? Do you know who the worst free throw shooter on the San Antonio Spurs is for the season this year? Andre Miller, and he's at about 69-70%. Do you think that's a coincidence? Probably not. But see, most coaches aren't Popovich. Most coaches don't have the pull that a guy like Greg Popovich has, where he says, hey, you're going to go work on your free throws. You're going to get better on your free throws, or else. I mean, you're not going to play, or we're going to move you, or we're going to find someone else, but you're going to go get better at working on these free throws. We're going to have some improvement. You're going to change the way you shoot, whatever it is. But that is the biggest difference. You have guys that really don't care about working on it, and you have coaches that just don't have the pull to make them work on it. Hey, speaking of the NBA playoffs, we are going to get to those in just 1 second. Plus, we've got to get to the winners and losers from the NFL draft. And as usual, we have to get to our Daily Dose top five that you do not want to miss. So stick around. We'll be right back.
Dear podcast listener, we accept the fact that we have to sacrifice not only our Wednesdays, but our Fridays as well to entertain you. But we think you are crazy to make us do a promo telling you who we think we are. When you listen to our podcast, you think you know who we are in the simplest terms, in the most convenient definitions. But what we found out is that each one of us is a dork.
I had the basket case.
And I'm a princess.
And I'm a pothead.
Does that answer your question? Sincerely yours, The Prime Podcast. Find out more at theprimepod.com. Think of the tender
things that we were working on. We are back to it. Have to say thank you to Mike from Fontana for the email. Appreciate that so much. You know, we've got to get to the NBA playoffs. Got to get to the NBA playoffs. Speaking of the San Antonio Spurs, you know, the NBA actually announced that their officiating crew missed five different calls in the final 13.5 seconds of the Game 2 Spurs-Thunder game on Monday night. Is that all? Just five? Because it felt like a lot more. I got to be honest with you. When I watched that game and I saw that last 13 seconds, I kind of thought, I missed about 37 calls in that final 13 seconds. That series is now tied 1-1. In game one, the Spurs absolutely pounded the Thunder. The Thunder didn't look like they were ready to go, didn't look like they really cared that much, kind of looked like they had just made the trip, but really weren't ready to go. Game two, Oklahoma City kind of gutted out a win. I don't know if they should have won that game. Let's just clear a couple things up. At the end of the game, here's how this all breaks down. Oklahoma City has the ball. They are up one, inbounding on the sideline. Miss number one. Spurs guard Manu Ginobili steps over the line defending the inbounding pass. Now, if you step over the line in that situation, you're not allowed to. In fact, you're supposed to give 3 feet. Now, unless Manu Ginobili has like go-go gadget arms, I don't know how he was 3 feet off the line because he was literally right on top of the inbounder. Deion Waiters is inbounding the ball. Manu Ginobili is up chest to chest with him. So the official, I don't know what he's looking at there. He completely misses that. Manu Ginobili steps over the line. Okay, whatever. That's miss number one. Miss number two, Deion Waiters, the inbounder, decides, I guess, hey, if you're going to let him be over the line, then I'm going to, you know, drill him with an elbow. So he clocks Ginobili with an elbow to create enough space so he can make the pass inbounds. There's miss number two. That should have been an offensive foul. That should have been Spurs ball at that point. So we've had things kind of go both ways. And okay, miss number three. The Spurs, Patty Mills, this is actually miss number three and four. Patty Mills and Kawhi Leonard, if you watch that clip again, they are both just grabbing Oklahoma City players and just, I mean, you're grabbing jersey, you're pulling them down. I mean, holding fouls, really easy calls. But the Spurs do steal the inbound pass. Now, the one thing that got some attention was that Spurs forward Danny Green kind of rips the ball away from Kevin Durant. I've watched that a couple times. That's not a foul. That's pretty clean play. He goes up and gets it. He takes it away. Yes, Durant falls down, but the fact that you fall down doesn't necessarily mean that I fouled you. It could just mean that you fell down. That's actually not one of the misses. That I was okay with. And then miss number five, Serge Ibaka, the Spurs go down. For one, the Spurs get a 3-on-1 out of this. They end up with a 3-on-1. Manu Ginobili coming down, kicks the ball to corner. You clank a shot and try to get a put back, whatever. Miss number five, Serge Ibaka from the Thunder grabs and holds onto the jersey of LaMarcus Aldridge in kind of a loose ball situation. There were a number of other things going on. Player goes into the crowd is holding on to him, couple guys getting hacked as they're trying to shoot up shots. It was a mess. It was a complete mess at the end of that game. Now, here's the problem. We know that NBA officiating is bad. Like, we know it's a tough job. It's a tough job. I have done some officiating. I'm telling you right now, it's a struggle to try to keep up, especially in basketball. It's not a situation like baseball where every 20 minutes there's a play. You're staring at it. Oh, wait. The batter steps out, kicks some dirt out of his cleats, steps back in. Ball one. See, that's not that hard to keep up with. It's hard for me as a spectator to keep up with it because I keep nodding off, but that's pretty easy to watch. In football, you do have some bang-bang plays, but then I have, 45 seconds between plays that I kind of regroup and get ready and, okay, let's get adjusted. What am I looking for here? And you kind of, in basketball, it is constant. I am constantly looking for anything. Could be a foul, could be a carry, could be a travel, could be this, could be that. Not to mention a crazy situation like what took place at the end of this Spurs-Thunder game. But we've now seen a couple games here in the playoffs really, really poor officiated. I mean, the end of the Raptors-Pacers game, you can make a pretty good pace or pretty good case that the Pacers kind of got jobbed on that deal with a no call. Now, I understand. It's constant action. It's a contact sport. And I realize that the officials swallow their whistles late in games. Because you want the players to dictate it. I don't want to make, a hand check call that's going to send a guy to a free throw line with the game hanging in the balance. I don't want to make that kind of call. I want to kind of let the players decide it. But at the same time, what, have we just gone to call your own fouls in the last 2 minutes? Yes, I want the players to decide it, but I can't punch you in the face and just be like, hey, they're letting us decide it. So I just decided it because I punched you in the throat. That doesn't work either, does it? I mean, sometimes you have to kind of protect these players from themselves. Because some of these players, just like in that situation the other day, I mean, Ginobili's all over the inbounder. You blow the whistle and you make him take a step back. I'm watching his feet. I'm watching the actual inbound. As soon as you tell... Think about this for 1 second. Deion Waiters is standing out of bounds and touched a player inbounds with his elbow. That's a dead ball at that point. What on earth are you watching? What on earth are you? And here's the thing, one of the things I guess that's bothering me the most about this is the fact that we're not hearing anything from the NBA commissioner. Remember Adam Silver? Remember that little bald nerd? Remember him? Remember he came out, he made a real big gutsy statement on the whole Clippers owner thing, and he was really going to come out and set things. We haven't seen him since. I don't even know if he's still around. I have seen Kobe Bryant more recently than I've seen Adam Silver. And I'll be honest, after that 60-point night in Kobe's finale, I thought Kobe might be dead. I thought his body might have shut down on him after all that. I've seen him more recently than I have Adam Silver. And we're not going to see Silver on this either because he doesn't come out. I don't know where he's at. I don't know if he's hiding or what he's doing, but we don't see Adam Silver ever. Kind of bizarre. A little bit strange. We're seeing some bad officiated games. We're seeing some officials have more of an impact on the game than they want to by not calling something, which doesn't make any sense. Now, to be fair, these calls didn't cost the Spurs the win. Hey, you've got a 3-on-1. Go execute and get a score. I don't want to hear from Spurs fans saying, well, the refs really cost us the game here. No, they didn't. You had every opportunity to win this game. The fact that you couldn't win it, that's on you. That's not on the officials. Now, I give the Spurs a ton of credit because following the game, Following this mess and this fiasco of, you could see the last 13 seconds were absolute and complete chaos. I didn't hear a single Spur player say, well, the refs, you know, cost us here. I heard Greg Popovich said, well, we'll move on. We'll move forward. The Spurs don't whine about it. The Spurs don't sit there and maybe privately they say it, but they don't say anything publicly about the officiating. They say, we've got to be better. I still like San Antonio in this series, but I told you, I expect a little bit of a dogfight. Oklahoma City is just a pain enough, and they can score. And I still hold to this. Which one of these teams comes out of this series healthy? Because if either one of these teams loses a player, if either one of these teams takes a step back, you're going to really, really struggle when you see Golden State in that next round. If one of these teams comes out completely unscathed and they're healthy going into that Golden State series, when we know, as talented as Golden State is, they can get some injury problems, then we have an interesting Western Conference final. Over on the other side, the Cleveland Cavaliers beat the Atlanta Hawks in Game 1. And it was interesting to watch that game because the Atlanta Hawks are kind of doing to Cleveland what they did to Boston. They're sagging off of everything. If you want to shoot it from outside, go ahead. And they're going to knock down a few of them. You know who they're really sagging off of? More than anybody? They're sagging off of LeBron James. They're sagging off of his jumper. And I understand it. Because it seems like sometimes we get to this time of season and LeBron gets in one of those weird kind of LeBron shooting funks. I think he messes with his shot. I don't know if he's trying to make it look different or he's trying to, you know, raise the difficulty factor or what it is. But I think LeBron James kind of messes with his shot and he starts to screw things up. The thing that hurt Atlanta in that game on Monday night was you can't let a guy like Tristan Thompson beat you. I mean, if LeBron beats you, fine. The same kind of scenario always plays out. LeBron gets his 20, 25. Kevin Love got his 20 or so. Kyrie got his 20 or so. Okay, you can live with that. But they were still in the game. Atlanta was still in the game. As well as the big three had played, Atlanta was right there. But then they let Tristan Thompson get 14 rebounds in game one. So it's kind of tough to look at this series. Sag on LeBron James. Let him shoot a little bit. He's more dangerous inside than he is outside. And then try to, you know, force Kyrie and K-Love to play a little bit of defense. I don't know. Maybe you can lose in six. All right. Cleveland's the best team in the East. I think that's pretty obvious. Raptors versus Heat. If you missed the Raptors versus Heat game last night, Toronto-Miami played a I don't know if it's a good game. It was an entertaining game. I think it was sloppy. I think it was ugly. But it was entertaining. The Toronto Raptors hit a half-court shot to tie the thing and send the game into overtime. Heat were up in this game for most all night. I mean, they were up 6, up 7. I think they were up as many as 11. But it seemed like right as the end, we'd get down to the last minute, all of a sudden they would melt down, miss some free throws, have some bad possessions, have some empty possessions, and Toronto would kind of get their way back into it. The Heat go on to win game one, and that game is in Toronto. They won that on the road. But I'm looking at the Raptors, and I know they're I think the number two seed in this. Kyle Lowry and DeMar DeRozan, they're making Kobe Bryant look like a percentage shooter. I mean, combined, they are shooting less than 33%. You're the big dogs. You're the scorers. You're the guys that are supposed to be carrying this team. You're shooting less than 33%. I don't give the Raptors very good odds unless that changes immediately. And the thing about that is that because you take the shooting, yes, obviously you want to make baskets, but the problem with it is that Toronto isn't a good enough rebounding team to shoot that poorly. It would be one thing if you were a poor shooting team, like a team like a Detroit or something. You shoot poorly, but you go crash the offensive boards again and again and again, and you still create some things. That's not what this team does. They need their scorers to actually score, and right now they're not doing that. And Goran Dragic and Luol Deng are giving them big matchup problems at the other end. Toronto's having a tough time defending the Heat. I like the Heat in this series. Aside from whatever happened in that game last night, I like the Heat in the series anyways. But I think that the Heat is the one team, I guess, that I give kind of an outside chance to maybe give Cleveland a series. And I don't know if they can do it, but I at least give them a chance because I think they pose some matchup problems. I think when you look at a guy like Dwayne Wade, there is no moment too big for Dwayne Wade. And I know he's old, and I know he's creaky, and I know he's broken down physically. But if you watch him, and yes, he cries way too much about every single call. Even in that game last night, game on the line, need a big shot, need a big possession. You got to have somebody step up. Give the ball to Dwayne Wade because he's going to make a play. And he has that confidence. He has that experience that he's going to get it done. The Heat are the only team in the East that I can see giving Cleveland any kind of a series, and I think they will handle the Raptors. The Warriors and the Blazers. Warriors are now up 2-0 on Portland, who were all kind of surprised got there with the injuries to the Clippers and the problems that they had. Portland Trailblazers get to go on. Warriors were down 11 going into the fourth, and you're kind of watching that game. At least I'm kind of watching that game, and you're kind of going, well, you know, Golden State is playing without Steph Curry. Remember, he has that grade one sprain in his knee. And you're sitting there going, well, are they going to be able to step up without Steph here? Is this team without Steph Curry going to be able to handle it without him? But I'll give this Golden State team one thing, and especially with the coaching of Steve Kerr, they know how to finish and they know how to put a run together. Basketball is a game of runs. We're going to go 8-2, and then you're going to go 11-4, and then we're going to go 6-3, and it's a game of runs. That's just how the game is. It's this ebb and flow. That's just how basketball is played. Golden State knows how to go on a run. They finished the game on a 34-12 run and win by 11. We're down by 11. They win by 11. Klay Thompson goes for 27. Here's the problem with this. Portland actually played pretty well. Like, I don't know if they're going to get much of a better game than they got last night. 17 turnovers, yes, that's not great, but that's not horrible against Golden State. They shot 44%. I mean, are you going to have a game that's better than that if you're Portland? It's probably about as good as it's going to get. I expect this to be a sweep, and if I am Golden State, I sit Steph Curry until we lose. And maybe until we lose again. Because if you go up to Portland and you win that game 3, Steph's not coming back till the next series. Remember, you can't look at the small picture. You can't just look at Portland and say we've got to get Steph back because we're down 2-1 or it's 2-1 and maybe they win the first game up in Portland. No, I've got to look to the next series. Because I know in the next series, whether it's the Thunder, who played Golden State as well as anyone did this year, or whether it's the Spurs, who we know have that postseason experience, you're going to have a dogfight in that next round. So I would sit Steph Curry until I absolutely had to bring him back and try to make him just get that knee rested. I want him as close to 100% as we're going to get, and I know that's not the easiest thing, but I got to get to him as close to 100% as I can. I expect the Warriors, if they don't sweep it, I expect it to be over in five. We got to get over to the NFL draft. You know, the 2016 NFL draft completed on Saturday, and there were a few surprises. You know, it's funny because it used to just be kind of the hardcore NFL geeks, you know, like me, that actually watched the NFL draft. That's not the case anymore, actually. I mean, remember this. The NFL is king. Like, you can be an NHL fan, you can be an NBA fan, you can be an English Premier League, whatever you want. The NFL, in the United States at least, the NFL is king. Choosing teams outdraws the NBA and the NHL playoffs. And I think that probably the NFL Combine could probably, I don't know, outdraw the World Series Game 7 or something. We love us some NFL here in this country. But we actually got, like, legit drama on Thursday night. Let me break this down. If you didn't see it, I'll be brief. Ole Miss offensive tackle Laremy Tunsil had his Twitter account hacked. And whoever hacked the account, I guess they have some suspicions about who did it, posted a video of Tunsil hitting a bong in a gas mask. Ooh, I like that. Right off the bat, I like that. They say it's like a former financial advisor or something to Tunsil, and that he's bitter about the relationship ending. But then it actually got a little bit weirder. Tunsil, teams started passing on Tunsil. Like, no one would draft him. Remember, just like a month ago, it was pretty widely speculated he was going to be the number one pick in the draft. Now, I know when two teams traded up for quarterbacks, okay, he's going to drop to three, but no further. He went from one to two to three all the way to Miami at 13. Still, the drama wasn't quite finished because when he got drafted, he proceeded to go to his press conference and admit the video was him, but he said it was 5 years ago. Now, I was told there wouldn't be math when I started doing the Daily Dose, but let me count back. He's like 22 now. That's 17. Yeah, you don't look like a 17-year-old kid in that video. I got news for you. And I'm not Sherlock Holmes, nor do I play him on any television networks, but I'm pretty sure you don't look like you're 17. This looks like it probably took place, I don't know, last month. And then, again, and then it's not over yet. He proceeds in the press conference to tell everyone that Ole Miss was paying his mom's bills for her. Well done, young man. Well done. I mean, this truly was reality TV. We were watching our own horrifying Truman Show as this kid literally was losing millions of dollars right before our eyes. And then he throws his school under the bus. It was a train wreck, and I couldn't look away from it. It was amazing. Then you had, you know, UCLA linebacker Miles Jack looking like someone had shot his dog as he's sitting in the green room, and no one's drafting him through the entire first round. The NBA draft, it's bizarre, but it is reality TV at its finest. Yesterday, we actually released our NFL team draft grades. If you would like to head over to the website, dailydosesports.wordpress.com, you can check out. And yes, I know it's way too early to issue these draft grades. We really don't know what these teams and these players are going to do with those picks, but it's fun. I mean, so we like to speculate on it. So you might have to head over and check that out. We did issue draft grades on every single team. But today, instead of grading the teams, we are going to take a look at the winners and the losers of the NFL draft. And as usual, it's probably not quite who you think. Let's get to a winner. First off, winner in the NFL draft. I've got to give a winner, and I'm going to surprise you when I do this. I'm going to give a winner to ESPN's Lewis Riddick and John Gruden. Look, I love to point and laugh at ESPN looking completely clueless as much as anyone. And many, many times they do. But I actually really liked Riddick and Gruden. You know, they actually, as bizarre as it sounds, they actually criticized a pick or two. And they actually pointed out some flaws with some players. Look, it's okay for you not to slobber all over every pick like it's the greatest pick in the history of the draft. That's all right. And to say that a player has some flaws in his games that need to be improved on, that's okay too. These guys even had some film. They brought up a couple different players and said, look, here are some concerns I have with this player. He does this wrong. He doesn't always play hard. He's got some issues. He doesn't know how to turn his hips. He doesn't know how to, whatever it might be. I kind of like seeing the other side of it. Instead of every single pick, we'd say, oh, that's a great pick. Oh, that's such a smart pick. Oh, what a great job they did in scouting this player. This young man has got a phenomenal future. You know what? Not every one of these guys has a phenomenal future. Some of these guys are a bunch of idiots, and they're not nearly as talented as we're making them out to be. So that's okay. I kind of like that. And I've got news for some of these young players. If you have a problem with like ESPN or some of these networks telling you that you have some flaws in your game, you're going to have a real problem with your head coach when you get to the town that drafted you. Because I got news for you. They're going to tell you everything wrong with your game. Let's get to a loser. All of the so-called experts that are now drooling over the AFC South. I can't believe some of, you know, the experts out there, the prognosticators, talking about the AFC South. Did you see the Tennessee Titans? They are going to be a contender in the AFC. Are they? Are they really? You know, the Jacksonville Jaguars, they are going to be a great franchise for a long time. Slow down. Slow down just a little bit. Yes, they got some decent picks. But understand this about the NFL draft, and we talked about this last week. It's such an inexact science. We don't know who's going to be great. We have no idea. And do you know how they say you got a draft steal? Do you know when the experts tell you you got a draft steal? When they had a guy calculated to go in the first round and he dropped to the third round, then they say you got a steal. But maybe he was a third rounder all along. Maybe he's a fourth rounder and you took him a round too early. We don't know. We have no idea. but slow down on the AFC South. What is it? Colts, Titans, Jaguars, and Texans. Yeah, I'm not going to say 9-7 is going to win it, but I'm hearing some of these experts saying, "Hey, you're going to have a team in this division go 13-3." Are you? Are you really? Because when it comes down to the end of the day, I still look at quarterback play, and I'm not sold on the AFC South quarterback play. Blake Bortles, eh. Brock Osweiler, no idea. Andrew Luck, no idea, because he doesn't have much help around him. And I'm still, jury's a little bit out on him, right? I mean, we still don't know exactly. And then Tennessee, I think Marcus Mariota is going to be okay. But he was on his back so much last year that I can't really tell. Slow down on the AFC South. Let's give a winner. A winner in the AFC draft, or the NFL draft. The quarterbacks. Remember, this is a bad quarterback class. There were 15 quarterbacks taken. So as bad as the class was, the NFL doesn't care. Like, they're still going to take quarterbacks no matter what. Three quarterbacks went in the first round. Two went in the first two picks. In an average year, in a year that we looked at the quarterbacks and said, yeah, I don't know, these quarterbacks aren't that good. Teams still overreach on quarterbacks every single year. They fall in love with combine drills. They fall in love with guys throwing on their pro day against no defense. And yes, I'm looking right at you, Los Angeles Rams and Denver Broncos. Hey, Jared Goff, maybe he ends up being a player, but in the offense he played in, he is nowhere near ready to be playing in the NFL. And he's probably going to be the day one starter. The Denver Broncos, I like a lot of what Paxton Lynch brings to the table, but I've got news for you. That kid's a project. He's not a very polished player. He is certainly not ready to take NFL snaps just yet. And in the league that we play in the day that we play in, he might be the day one starter. Now, if they sit him for a year, okay, maybe. But I've watched him a little bit. He is a little more polished version of Tim Tebow, and everyone threw a fit about Tim Tebow. Maybe he'll end up being a player. Maybe he'll be okay. He's a big, strong kid. I'll give him that. But you might have reached way too early on a quarterback there. We'll kind of keep that in mind and see going forward. Got to give a loser. I feel bad for you. But those guys in the green room, the Miles Jacks, the Reggie Raglands, the A'shaun Robinsons, not getting picked. Wow, that's kind of tough to watch. And like I said, it's reality TV. But it's a train wreck, and I can't turn away from it. Might want to make sure that you have a little better information before you go over there and you sit in the green room while everyone else disappears around you and you're left sitting there all by yourself. Winner. Got to give a winner to Ohio State. Ohio State had 12 players selected in the draft. They had 5 players selected in the first round alone. How on earth did Ohio State not win the national championship? Oh, that's right, because they couldn't beat Michigan State. Loser. Got to give a loser to Alabama and, of course, to Ole Miss. You know, Bama actually did win the national championship. Do you realize they had one first-rounder? One first-rounder selected. Ryan Kelly, center, went to Indianapolis. There were only 7 players taken out of Alabama total. What if they had actually lost a few games? Would anyone have gotten drafted out of Alabama? You know Nick Saban was steaming. Nick Saban is sharpening his pitchfork and you know, getting those coals just a little bit hotter. And, of course, got to give a loser to Ole Miss because the second that Laramie Tunsil was saying that, you know, Ole Miss had paid his light bill, NCAA investigators were on their way. Like, he hadn't quite finished it. He was like, yeah, and some of the coaches at Ole Miss helped my mom pay her light bill, and they were already in their car. Get there. Get to Oxford, Mississippi. Now, there's something shady going on at Ole Miss. Got to give a loser to Ole Miss. Winner. Got to give a winner to Ezekiel Elliott, right? Running back out of Ohio State. 4th pick overall. He gets to go play for the Dallas Cowboys behind that offensive lineman. I mean, he's got a huge offensive line in front of him. He should have a huge season. Of course, you know that Ivy League coach down in Dallas loves to show everyone how smart he is by not running the football and throwing it all over the place. And I'm going to be honest. I can't name a single player on your defense. That defense is awful. And then Ezekiel Elliott, yes, you're a winner. You're going to maybe a good situation, but your biggest night of your career, and you wear a crop top? You wear a blouse? No. Whatever, I guess. You go, boy. Ezekiel Elliott, I give him a winner, sort of. Gotta give a loser. Our final loser, gotta give a loser to the San Francisco 49ers. The Niners traded up, traded like two or three picks to draft an offensive guard. You can literally, you can draft a guard anytime you want to. Like, there, you like right now, the draft has been over for a few. You can draft a guard right now if you want to. Really? You had to trade up in the first round? You had to trade two or three picks to get a guard? That's what you needed the most? I can go draft a guard right now, and the draft has been over for a few days. Kind of bizarre. As we do every week, we've got to get to our Daily Dose top five. You know, another team that I would put on the loser list, I would probably put Tampa on that loser list, and I'll tell you why. The Buccaneers traded up like three picks to draft a kicker in the second round. A kicker. They took the kicker out of Florida State. He's got a big leg. He doesn't miss. From inside of 40, he's never missed a field goal. But I don't know if I'm trading up and drafting a kicker that early. And I understand it. Because with the NFL today, with the new NFL rule changes and everything, kicking that extra point, it's a little bit bigger. I still struggle moving up to draft a kicker, though. So today, on the Daily Dose, we look back at the times that kickers and punters got drafted the highest. Today, our Daily Dose top five, the top five highest drafted kickers and punters of all time. Because sometimes you move up to get a kicker or punter, and it doesn't quite turn out the way you think it will. And sometimes it's good. We have some examples of that. Sometimes it's really, really bad. Let's count down our Daily Dose top five. Number five on our list. In the first round of the 1973 draft, at pick number 23, the Oakland Raiders took a punter named Ray Guy. Ray Guy played for 13 years. He was a seven-time Pro Bowler, led the NFL in punting three different seasons, and he was elected to the Pro Football Hall of Fame in 2014. Hey, that's not bad. That's not bad. Nah, at the end of the day, he's still a punter. I mean, he still plays, what, four snaps a game or whatever it is, if things are going the way that you want them to go. But hey, that's about as good as it's going to get right there. That's probably the best example we're going to get right there. Number five. Number four, in 2000, first round. Again, a little bit of a trend here. The Oakland Raiders trade up to the number 17 pick. And with the 17th pick in the 2000 draft, they select kicker Sebastian Janikowski. Now, Janikowski is kind of a mixed bag. I'm not going to lie. Yes, he's kicked some huge kicks. Yes, he's made some really, really long kicks. He can boom the ball. But he's not always that accurate. He's made one Pro Bowl. I don't know that you'd really say he's made the Raiders that good. They've never won anything since he's been there. So, was that 17th pick overall in the draft? I mean, it wasn't like you brought him in and he transformed our franchise. I mean, he roofied a few more people, but I don't know if it's really that, you know, if he's really done that much for your franchise. That's number four. Number three on our list, and I've got news for you. It's going to go downhill from here. Number three on our list, in 1978, with the first pick, or the first round pick, number 15, the St. Louis Cardinals, at number 15, draft Steve Little. Steve Little, who had gone to Arkansas. And Steve Little, and the reason that they grabbed him so early, Steve Little had kicked a 67-yard field goal against Texas in 1977. But when they grabbed Steve Little, it turned out that Steve Little wasn't very good. I mean, his time, and basically, you know, he was pretty much just a field goal kicker. He made just 48% of his kicks. I mean, his accuracy wasn't very good. Six games into the 1980 season, the Cardinals cut him. And then it kind of gets worse. Steve Little got cut, and within hours of getting cut, he had a horrible car crash that left him a quadriplegic. You know, needless to say, never played again. Died at the age of 43. Sad, sad story with Cardinals taking Steve Little. Never quite turned out. Number two on our list, in 1979, the New Orleans Saints, who had nothing on their roster. They had no players. They needed help everywhere. So what did they do with the number 11 pick? They drafted a kicker slash punter by the name of Russell Erkselben. Yeah. No, seriously, I'm not making this up. Now, again, he is also tied for longest kick in NCAA history. He had kicked a 67-yard field goal versus Rice when he played for Texas. He lasted for 6 seasons. He played in 59 games, mostly a punter, and if they needed like a long kick, he would come in and try it and usually miss it. It wasn't very good. Made about half of his kicks. He ended up after his career, went into a career as a financial investor. And he ended up getting busted for securities fraud. And he's in the middle of serving 90 months in federal prison. Yeah, so not real good for Russell Erkselben. I hope I'm pronouncing that right. Then again, he's a kicker. Who cares? What's he going to do? Number one on our list, Daily Dose, top five, highest drafted kickers and punters. We saw Tampa move up, get themselves a kicker in the second round. How about this? In 1966, Washington, with the number six pick, not second round, not third round, the number six overall pick, they select Princeton kicker Charlie Gogolak. Now, Gogolak was one of the first soccer-style kickers. He was one of those guys that would come in from the side, kind of take that, you know. They got so much more power than the straight-on kickers that we were used to back in the 50s and 60s. Gogolak came in. He's okay. I mean, he played 6 seasons. He made about 56% of his kicks. But here's the problem. When you draft a kicker that early, there's usually a guy later in the draft that you look back and say, oh, we could have had him. Because, you know, the Chiefs took running back Mike Garrett at 18. I mean, Dallas took defensive back Walt Garrison later in the draft. There were a few other guys out there, and you used your pick on a kicker. Not always the best thing to do. Hey, next week on the show, you know, I may have something special for you next week on the show, and I'm not going to give too much of it away, but you're just going to have to trust me on this. I might have something a little different for you next week on the show. As we always do, we will have the latest and greatest in sports news. We will talk some NBA, NFL, maybe some NHL. And of course, you know, we will have our Daily Dose Top 5. Hey, there's a big fight coming up too. You know, Canelo Alvarez and Amir Khan get in the ring this week. And I'm hoping that at some point, one of these guys will actually get in the ring with Gennady Golovkin, who is probably the best fighter on the planet right now. We will have to talk a little bit about that. Hey, if you get a chance, head over to wherever it is that you download the podcast from and just give us a quick 5-star rating. We would appreciate that so much. Have to say thank you to JSP. Could not do any of this without you. I will see you all next week.